So if you go into a church, maybe in the UK, and you look up at a piece of stained glass window that's 500, 600, 700 years old, if you see the purple or red colors, that's likely to be tiny particles of gold. So historically, gold has been there for a lot of these types of developments, and it's a really interesting part of gold's history.
Welcome to another episode of Unearthed, the podcast where we'll unearth all you need to know about gold and the role it plays in today's societies. My name is John Reed. I'm the market strategist at the World Gold Council for Europe and Asia. I'm here with my colleague and co-host, Joe Cavatoni.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here today on our next episode of Unearthed. Our focus today is on all things technology and how gold has influenced tech throughout the ages. Our esteemed guest is Dr. Trevor Keel, who is a director of Material Value Limited and a consultant and a colleague of ours here at the World Gold Council. Thanks for joining us today, Trevor, and we're really excited to hear from you and unearth a lot of interesting facts about gold and technology.
Excellent. Thank you, Joe and John, for the introduction. Very pleased to be here. And I'm absolutely delighted to be here to talk a little bit about technology and the role of technology in gold. It's something that isn't really spoken about a huge deal when you compare it to maybe the jewelry market and the investment market. So delighted to be here to cover some of those points, which hopefully will be of interest.
I'm sure it will be. So let's begin at the beginning, Trevor. What role has gold historically played in the development of technology?
That's an interesting question. I mean, gold has actually been involved in so many different ways in development of all sorts of different types of technology over the years. It's been used in the dental industry for thousands of years now. Gold wires were basically used to hold replacement teeth in place. And it's because the people back all those thousands of years ago recognized that gold didn't degrade. It's got a series of chemical and physical properties that make it very useful for a range of different types of technologies. So the dental one is quite interesting, but also I always like to think that the early kind of glass artisans were the original nanotechnologists. You know, you could use tiny quantities of metals to actually color glass. So if you go into a church, maybe in the UK, and you look up at a piece of stained glass window that's 500, 600, 700 years old, if you see the purple or red colors, that's likely to be tiny particles of gold. Now, the glass artisans didn't realize they were using gold nanoparticles, but they were, which I always look up when I see a piece of glass like that. And I think it's quite a nice kind of link into nanotechnology and the role gold has played over the years. And I think the final thing I think I would say, you can't really sort of ignore the electronics market when it comes to gold's sort of application technology. And I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit about that in more depth later. But some of the very early developments in the understanding of electronics and electronic devices, gold was there for nearly every single one of those because gold is a very good conductor of electricity, but it doesn't degrade. It doesn't sort of start to fail where other metals do, such as copper and silver. They will degrade in air, they will degrade in water, whereas gold doesn't. And so really the early developments within the electronics industry, much of them were down to the availability and the understanding of gold. So electronic printed circuit boards, for example, the tracks that you use on printed circuit boards, 100 years ago, they recognized that you could use gold for those tracks. The people at Bell Labs after the Second World War, they developed transistors utilizing gold and gold wire and gold foil. So historically, gold has been there for a lot of these types of developments. And it's a really interesting part of gold's history that I think is worth sort of nodding to, basically.
So Trevor, I think you've highlighted the fact that people are probably aware that electronics is definitely an industry that's made use of gold. But maybe we could talk a little bit more about some of the more recent history with gold and the industries that it's basically coming up in. Now, we talked about electronics, like we've said, maybe transistors, but help us understand a little bit more of the application there in some of the modern era industry and electronics that were basically using gold.
Gold now is still used heavily in the electronics industry, and that's testament to gold as a material, really. Last year, just over 250 tons of gold went into the electronics industry. That's roughly 5 to 6% of the entire demand for gold across the world. So it really is testament to gold's value within the electronics industry. It's used in all sorts of different ways. And I suppose there are two key kind of areas of application for gold in the modern electronics industry. The first is wires. So incredibly thin wires that connect devices to one another within electronic devices. These wires are drawn incredibly thin. So in total, in each device, a very small quantity of gold. But when you multiply that up over all the different devices we rely on today, it turns into billions upon billions of devices. And the second key application for gold is used as a coating, basically, as a plated coating. And that goes onto connectors. So quite often, if you turn over a piece of electronic equipment, or if you take the battery off of a piece of electronic equipment, you'll see a flash of gold in the device. And generally speaking, that is gold. It's either pure gold or it's an alloy of gold. And again, we come down to why does the modern industry still use gold? And it's because it's reliable. You know, it's because it doesn't fail. And it's particularly important in high value, safety critical devices. And so at the end of the day, if you press your brake pedal down in your car, you want your car to stop. And gold will be playing a part to make sure that happens. So it's interesting to see that modern electronics industry utilizes gold in the same fundamental ways as the original industry did, but obviously at a much different level. The quantities of gold are probably similar. If you look back over the last 10 or 20 years, the overall quantity of gold is similar, but the number of devices where you're finding gold is many, many, many times higher. So there is an interesting kind of seesaw effect going on there within the market, which is quite important.
So you mentioned the 250 tons of gold roughly for last year's demand. That number has been consistent. Based on what you're telling us, is that a consistent number that we're hearing and seeing in the demand for technology?
I think the high point for demand, if I remember correctly, was back in 2010. And it's dropped slowly since then with a bit of an upkick at various points. The electrification of our world that has accelerated over the last few years, particularly, has really kind of helped support demand for gold and helped support the number. Because at the end of the day, technology development, as new technologies come onto the market, old technologies tend to disappear. And particularly that is the case when you have a relatively expensive material like gold. And I think, again, it's testament to the fact we are still seeing multiple hundreds of tons of gold go into the industry every year. It's testament to the importance and the reliance we have on the physical and chemical properties of gold within these devices. So there has been a slow decline over the last decade overall, but you still have a very significant quantity of gold going into the market every year, even in 2022, 2023.
So the recent uptick we've seen over the last few years in technology demand for gold, driven by the increased electrification of the world, that increased electrification looks like it's going to continue under, you know, virtually any circumstances. Do you think we'll see growth coming through in gold demand for technology? Or do you think the very clever scientists and engineers and indeed PhDs like yourself will find ways of getting the same impact with less gold? What are you expecting?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a very valid question as well. You know, when you have a relatively expensive material like gold, there is always a push-pull. There will always be people and companies who wish to remove gold from their process because it is an expensive component. And I think it's kind of important to remember that we have seen increasing quantities of semiconductors, increasing quantities of chips over the last few years, you know, really significant increases. But gold has either stayed flat or maybe experienced very slight increases. That does suggest that smaller quantities of gold are being used in every chip. You know, when you look at the numbers, if the same quantity of gold was being used in every chip, you would expect to see a very significant increase in gold demand. And we haven't seen that. So, John, to your point, there is work ongoing to either eliminate or use smaller quantities of gold. But we're definitely seeing that tail off. You know, I think the peak for that period of, in the industry, we call it thrifting. The word is thrifting. Okay. So that is the idea of taking a smaller quantity of material to do the same job. So I think the peak of thrifting probably was back about 10 or 15 years ago when the gold price started to increase. Companies started thinking, wow, this is now costing us a lot more money for the gold we use. Let's work out ways of using less gold. And so that was a real drive for those companies to either change material, to try to utilize less gold, make a thinner wire, make a thinner coating, all of those types of considerations. But when it comes to thrifting, you reach a point where you can't really thrift any further. Okay, you can only make a wire so thin, or you can only make a coating so thin. So I believe we're getting to that point where thrifting, how much further can companies really thrift gold without removing it altogether?
But obviously, the miniaturization trend, everything getting smaller, is going to count against big increases in gold demand because there's more chips, because it's a bit like a fast food shop. The chips are getting smaller every year.
Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, the chips are getting smaller, but the chips are increasing in quantity. So you have, again, this kind of like this push-pull, this sort of tug of war almost between the number of chips and the size of the chip. All of that goes into ultimately dictating what the gold market looks like with respect to the electronics industry. It's a fascinating conversation. There are so many elements to it. There are so many facets to it. As you know, John, and you know, we've discussed many, many times, it's a very difficult thing to predict, and it's a very difficult thing to really understand at a fundamental level. But as a scientist, I look at gold's fundamental physical and chemical properties will always keep it relevant within the electronics industry, because you cannot replace those properties. It's not possible. And so I think if we in 10 years do this again, we will still be having the same conversation about gold's relevance within the electronics industry, and it will still be a significant source of demand for the industry.
So this has been so far really interesting, but I want to try and bring it to life, like practical life for the listener right now. So I'm going to ramble off a few items that are just sitting on my desktop and just trying to take what we're talking about and like really make it understood by the listener. So a laptop computer, gold's in there, right?
Yes.
A microphone and a camera linked to my laptop computer to help me do my podcast.
Correct.
Phones on my desk, iPhone, etc. All in there.
That's right.
I mean, we said cars. What are the other things that are just continuing to be day-to-day items in our world? I mean, almost like if you took away everything that had a trace amount of gold from a technical perspective in it, like your world would be kind of empty.
A great question. And I think my rule of thumb has always been the high-end devices and the expensive devices tend to be those that contain the majority of gold. So our laptop, our mobile device, you know, your $1,500 iPhone, that continues to utilize gold, because those guys, they don't want the device failing within 6 months because of a duff connection at the end of the day. That is too big a risk for an organization like Apple. They do not want that to be a point of failure. And whilst gold does obviously cost more than copper, silver, quite clearly it costs more, the fact you are now using such tiny quantities of it in some of these devices, the drive to move away from gold isn't quite as strong as it used to be. Again, it's one of these kind of facets of the decline in use of gold per device or per chip. The drive to remove that last little bit of gold kind of starts to sort of dissipate against the potential risk of failure and against the potential risk of mass recalls, for example, of devices. So it's a really good question. And like I say, my sort of rule of thumb is high-end, safety-critical devices that ultimately you do not want to fail, or the manufacturer does not want to fail. Your $5 toy from China won't contain any gold in it now, but 25 years ago, probably would have done.
So I should have kept all my kids' toys. I wish we had done this 25 years ago. So actually, just one point of clarity for me. I'm a bit intrigued by the modernization of automobiles. But a traditional automobile, a combustion engine automobile, when we hear about supply chain challenges, and an EV, both of these are having chips and gold, I'm assuming?
Absolutely. Yeah. So traditional kind of ICE, internal combustion engines, will have considerable amount less than an EV for obvious reasons. You know, there's all of the connections. And also, you know, as cars have modernized, you know, we now as consumers expect more functionality from various parts of the vehicles we drive. You know, you expect parking sensors, you expect all sorts of different functionalities that 20, 25 years ago, you would never have seen on a vehicle other than maybe the very, very highest end vehicle. So absolutely, the electronic infrastructure within vehicles now is growing rapidly, and that will be a source of support for gold within the electronics market. I have no doubt, because again, these are high-end, very expensive devices. If you want to call a vehicle a device, they are very expensive. And again, it's not something that manufacturers want to see failures from utilizing lesser materials within their electronics. So, and again, a general rule of thumb that we've used, it's very difficult to know precise quantities. And again, this is a conversation we've had over the years with both of you. Very difficult to know precise quantities of gold in vehicles, to be honest. We have a sort of a rough rule of thumb that maybe, I mean, if you're talking about semiconductor value within vehicles. You might see that electronic vehicles, EVs, have maybe 4 to 5 times the value of semiconductors within them. But again, now, you know, that's probably something we worked on a little while ago. That may even be a little bit out of date now, that, you know, the numbers might be higher now. And when you think of that, all of a sudden, you are probably talking that there is a significantly larger quantity of gold in an EV when compared to a traditional ICE vehicle.
I'm going to switch gears a bit, Trevor. We've spoken a lot about gold and electronics, and for very good and obvious reasons. But there's more to it than that. And I know that the World Gold Council over the years has had partnerships with other organizations attempting to investigate the usage of gold in technology away from the electronics field. Do you want to talk through some of the examples of that?
Sure. I mean, we've obviously talked a lot about electronics because it kind of is the major part of demand. But, you know, gold is used, as I kind of mentioned at the beginning of our discussion, gold is used in all sorts of different ways in technology. The World Gold Council over the years has supported a number of different types of projects that try and support the development of new applications for gold. So obviously, beyond electronics, gold is used in the healthcare sector, it's used in the chemical sector. There are all sorts of different sectors that use gold, but often on a much smaller level. Okay, so the quantities are much smaller, but often those applications have play a very important role in our society. So at the moment, the WGC is supporting a couple of projects, actually. The first is with a professor at the University of Toronto, and he's developing ways to treat brain tumors using gold nanoparticles effectively as a carrier for a drug. So you can use gold to actually help drugs get into tumors and help drugs actually better target tumors. So there is a project ongoing at the moment. It's very interesting work. And the second project that's ongoing is actually looking at the use of gold as a catalyst. Now, as a chemist, I was a chemist along many, many years ago. Now, catalysis is a very important part of chemistry. Catalysis basically is a way of increasing the speed of a reaction, a chemical reaction. Okay. Now, what's interesting about gold is, even though people think of it as this inert metal that never is affected by kind of reactions, it's forever metal. If you turn it into tiny quantities, if you turn it into nanoparticles, gold suddenly becomes a very, very interesting and active catalyst. So at the moment, there is a project ongoing with the National Research Council of Canada, who are also based in the Toronto area. And what they're looking to do is take these gold catalysts and actually try and improve their effectiveness for the transformation of carbon dioxide into carbon monoxide. So again, I won't go into the details of that, but why that's important is it gives a potential route for taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and actually turning it into carbon monoxide, which can then be turned into fuels. Okay. And those fuels, if you make them using water and clean energy and clean electricity, you can effectively create what is termed artificial photosynthesis, basically, where you're taking unwanted byproduct out of the air, you're turning it into carbon monoxide, and then that carbon monoxide is turned into fuels, which we can then use and basically create this circular kind of like use of carbon. Now, obviously, that has a lot of potential impacts, lots of potential good impacts. But there is a long way to go within that project. You know, the World Gold Council is working sort of side by side with the NRC to actually work out. We know that these catalysts are very effective. However, can they be made to be industrially effective? And so there is a lot of work going on around, are these commercially viable catalysts? How can we make them into commercially viable catalysts? So that work is actually ongoing as we speak. And it's a really, really exciting project with a really top team in Toronto.
Yeah, it's fascinating to hear that gold can be part of the energy transition as well, if we can prove that it works on an industrial scale.
Trevor, it's really interesting to hear all the different applications from a technical perspective. But when we talk about heavy industry or technology, do these firms and these organizations, do they care about the quality of the gold, the higher quality gold? Or what do they think about when they think about the caritage of gold, which is often a discussion we have in the investment landscape around the different types and shapes and weights of gold that you want to invest in or consume or save?
Yes. Yeah, so I think there's probably two answers to that question. Firstly, the first answer for the electronics industry would be absolutely yes, they care about the quality of the gold. So quite often, if you visit a refinery, that refinery will have been requested to actually make 5 nines gold, which is 99.999% pure gold. And that's pretty much as high as you can get as a quantity, as a quality of gold. So the electronics industry, certain applications require incredibly pure gold for the end application. So yes, for the electronics market. For the other players, so for, say, the catalysis market and for the folks who are maybe making nanoparticles of gold, they're not so worried because ultimately they have to put the gold through a process to make their end product. So that the catalyst has to be made, has to go through a chemical, sort of a solution-based chemical process. And likewise, making a nanoparticle of gold requires a solution-based process. So they can make particles from a much lower quality of gold. So yes and no, Joe, would be my response to that question.
Well, that's really helpful and actually great clarity, because often we talk about this type of gold, the quality of gold, and the World Gold Council is working on initiatives to kind of help people get better understanding and trust and track and tracing of those types of different types of gold to just kind of improve the market in general. So it's nice to know that in the technical side, or on the technical side, that there's an attention to detail. Just carrying on with a little bit on the medical side, for lack of a better way of putting it. You know, I heard a lot of information that was really interesting during some really challenging times around COVID. Maybe you can unpack that a little bit for us and talk a little bit about gold in that context.
Sure. I mean, you know, again, I've sort of talked about this quite a number of times over the years. And the use of gold in the medical space is an incredibly important story, and it's an incredibly important application for gold as a metal. The quantities, I'll start by saying the quantities are minuscule, tiny, grams quantities that will feed millions upon millions of tests. So this story really is not a story about demand. This story is about impact of gold, basically. An impact in our world, in all corners of the world as well. So the example you give of COVID, we've all taken a rapid COVID test now. Everybody listening to this podcast will have taken one of those tests. And so each and every one of you will have used gold, basically, possibly without knowing it. Hopefully now you're listening to me and you'll now know. But the little purple line that either comes up as one line or two is gold. They're gold particles. They're minuscule, and they have been used in that type of application now for about 40 years. And probably before the COVID outbreak, the best known example of that was in the malaria space. Okay. So I'll tell that story very briefly. It's actually quite a long and involved story, but I'll tell the brief version of it. There's always been a problem with malaria and getting drugs to people who may or may not have malaria. And that problem really stemmed from diagnosis. Okay. So what used to happen was there was no really, particularly in the developing world, there was no really reliable way to quickly tell whether somebody had malaria or not. Okay, so what tended to happen as a standard response, someone goes to a clinic and had a fever, they were given malaria drugs, full stop, without any sort of testing. Now, as it turned out, probably only about 1 in 10 people actually went to a clinic with malaria. So you're giving 9 in 10 people malaria drugs for no real reason. And what that causes is problem with drugs becoming, you know, the human body becoming used to the drugs, the drugs becoming less effective. So it has lots of knock-on effects. So what the World Health Organization recognized they needed to do was work out a way of developing a reliable route to diagnose malaria. And that's what they use those rapid tests for, basically. Each and every one of those contained a tiny, tiny quantity of gold. And now hundreds of millions of those are used every year to diagnose people with malaria. So I think that it's one of gold's most important applications. It's obviously has no real impact when it comes to demand, but it's an incredibly important application for the metal. And of course, then COVID, HIV, sepsis, all of these types of tests also utilize the same technology and rely on gold in the same way.
As we approach the end of the show, as we do to all of our guests, Trevor, I'd like you to share the most interesting and maybe obscure fact that you know about gold. Now, I think in your position, you probably know quite a few, but why don't you start off with your best one and we'll go from there.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I know quite a few. I suppose the one that has always been kind of close to me because of my background as a chemist and et cetera, is, again, it's a medical one. Gold actually back in the 1980s was successfully developed into a drug, which is a real rare kind of beast, to be quite honest with you. It went through the FDA process and it got its regulatory approval, and it ended up being used. It was a drug called Oranafin. Oranafin was used for about 10 years as a treatment for rheumatoid arthritis, people that had quite severe rheumatoid arthritis, which is obviously a horrible disease. Now, the company I used to work for before I started working for the Gold Industry were the company that actually developed that drug. And it's an incredible story of drug development. It's a really unusual one because each molecule of that drug contains a single atom of gold. And gold is at the heart of how that drug works. And interestingly, they still don't really know how it works. They don't really understand what the true mechanism of action of that drug is, which I find fascinating, you know, how you can get a drug all the way to market and still not really properly understand how it works. But there is an atom of gold in each molecule of that drug. And it's a cool story because they got it all the way to market. And it continues to be a cool story to this day, because obviously now it's been superseded, like drugs are regularly superseded by other drugs, by new treatments. But now there's a lot of interest again in Oranafin to actually come back maybe as a treatment for different types of illnesses. And because now it's off patent, it's been granted what's called orphan status. So anybody can use it to try and develop a new treatment. And there's lots of clinical trials that have been either ongoing or have recently finished and looking at Oranafin for potential other treatments as a cheap drug, potentially to treat things again in the developing world. So for me, that's always been the thing. It was an amazing story. It's a really cool kind of aspect of Gold's technical sort of story. And I've always quite liked that one myself.
So that's our show for today. Thank you, Trevor, for joining us. It's great to hear your insights about the history of gold in technology, where we are now and where it may go in the future. We'll have you back, I'm sure. This is a fascinating topic, which will have lots of follow-up episodes, I'm sure.
Great. Thank you both, John and Jay. It's been great fun.